Blog Talk Radio.
Rich Wilson. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Live. We're here every Sunday evening talking the game of baseball, talking the game of fantasy baseball, talking about whatever the heck we want to talk about. And I hope everybody celebrating in the United States had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I know I did. All the kids and their significant others, we all met at the beach and just had a terrific weekend. Over eight, like there was no tomorrow. We just got, I think, loaded up on sweets. It was a sweet pies and cakes. I thought of Tim during the whole process where not only did we get three pies, we also got a coconut cake, which was killer. I might even start to change my opinion about cake. The cake was fantastic, but I guess I'm still a pie guy at heart. But again, I hope you all had a chance to spend time with family and eat too much. I watched a little bit of football, but I'm not playing fantasy football this year, and I got to tell you, I do miss it. I have no idea what's happening in the football world. So I watched the two early games. The Dallas Cowboys looked good. They killed the Redskins. That was pretty remarkable. And I watched a little bit of that. I guess Detroit always plays that early game. So that was our day, eating too much, visiting with family and friends, and then watching football. So it was a lot of fun. Let me see if I can bring on the great Tim McLeod. Tim, are you there? No, Tim. So I'm not sure what is happening. Tim is not, we're not able to connect with Tim. So hopefully he will call back in another way. So he has gone now. I'm assuming he'll call back in on his mobile phone. Guys, if you want to get a hold of us, you can do that. Go to our website, prospect361.com, and you can go and ask Rich or ask Tim, ask 361. A lot of people do those questions, and I usually write fairly detailed responses. Or if you don't want to get do it that way, you can always reach out to Twitter at RichWilsonP361, at RichWilsonP361, and you can ask me questions, and I will come back with cryptic answers for those questions, because I've only got, 280 characters to respond in. If you want to support the show, you can go out to iTunes and rate and review us, or you can go to Prospect361 where it says visit our sponsors and click on one of our sponsors, StubHub. You can also go and visit MLB Shops, Steiner Sports, and, of course, Amazon.com. I'm going to put the sneeze button. Excuse me. I just sneezed. So hopefully that either will trim that out or you'll hear the sneeze in there. I apologize. I'm still getting over my cold. It has been remarkable. Let's bring on the great Tim McLeod. Timmy, how are you?
I'm good, Rich. Other than the fact that Blog Talk still hates me, it won't let me dial through, but it will not let me connect and just boots me back out again. So here we are with my cell phone for another week.
Yeah, you sound good, though. Everything sounds good. I was just about to bring you on, and I sneezed. So hopefully my cough button worked, but I don't think it did. I think it kind of mutes it a little bit. So, but anyway, how are you?
Bless you, by the way. Somebody's got to say it, right?
Man, did you finally recover from our 2 hour and 20 minute non mock draft podcast we had last week?
Yeah, I did. It took until sometime around Wednesday, Rich, but I survived. How about you?
It was great. I had a lot of great feedback. People loved the prospect talk. We were going to do more prospects today, Tim, but I've only got an hour for the show. I've got early morning calls. I got to take my son and his fiance to the airport in the morning, and then I've got to head off myself going to Brazil. So I head off at 12:30. So wanted to keep it short and sweet. But our good friend Dr. Mershak said that he was listening to his to the podcast on a walk and was laughing when I was talking about the ear hair braiding of the ear hair. And apparently somebody walked by and said, "What on earth are you listening to?" And he said, "A baseball podcast." And the woman apparently said, "Oh, okay." So I don't know what that means, Tim, but I thought it was funny.
I'm glad he didn't say our expert analysis on ear hair.
That
would have been a little much.
Very, very true. So, Timmy, Thanksgiving was good for us and had a great time. But it's time to get busy with baseball now.
Yeah, it's eventually one of these days somebody will sign a free agent or threaten to, and we'll be off to the races. Some interesting news out of Seattle. There's a couple teams interested in Diaz, but DePoto was saying that, you know, Diaz and Mitch Haniger, I can't figure that one out, but the two of them are virtually untouchable. Oh. So obviously DePoto has never played fantasy baseball, because everybody knows you sell your closer, right, when you don't need one, and you pick one up when you do. And, you know, maybe he's just playing a game trying to drive the price up. But if I was in his shoes, I'd be asking the world for Diaz, and somebody will probably pay it.
Yeah, you know, what's been interesting, obviously we're going to talk about the big Yankee-Seattle trade, but more trade talk than there has been on signing free agents. And, you know, this happened last year, Tim, where the free agents were all priced way out of everybody's price tag, and they started making trades. And the same thing might happen this year as, boy, it looks like Arizona's going to move Goldie, and they're probably going to move you know, some pitching if they've got it and if they can move it. And you know, Cleveland's still out there saying they're going to move stuff. We're seeing Seattle moving people. So it is fascinating what's going on. And, Timmy, there's not a lot of buyers. I think I saw you post somewhere that, there's only 10 out of the 30 teams think they could compete this year?
Yeah, the number is very small. It's sort of depressing, isn't it, when you're not even to December and already two-thirds of the teams aren't playing for next year. Eventually it's going to boil down to, let me see, we got four teams playing for the World Series this year, and why are we playing 162 games?
Yeah, I hear you, Timmy, and it makes it difficult for our game, because I'm afraid with all the free agents that are out there, and the free agents are more substantial than they were last year, particularly guys that have been pretty good fantasy players. And, you know, let's take Daniel Murphy. I mean, it's a nice fantasy player. After he finally was healthy, he played fairly well when he got traded. I think it's very conceivable, Tim, that we could get to April 1st, you know, March 15th, something, and he will not be signed. And then we're going to have him and a lot of other guys. Do you draft him? Well, of course you're going to draft him, because he's going to be signed by somebody. But will there be enough teams that want to sign a Daniel Murphy? I don't know.
When you've got as few teams contending as they do, you got to look at the position. Do they need to fill it? Is it an upgrade? How much do they want to invest? If I was a free agent right now, Rich, I would take the first decent offer tossed my way and sign on the dotted line and get it over and done with, because the longer you wait, I think the tougher it's going to be, especially when you start looking at DH-type players, older players in the 30-plus bracket. Unless you're Patrick Corbin, who's a pitcher where the demand is high, bats, I think it could be a problem. I'd be signing early. I really would. Take what you need.
I think two things that we learned last year. One is, if you're over 30, I totally your logic is spot on, Timmy. You need to get real with how much money you're going to be signed for. The 2012 is no longer here, when guys who were 35 years old and still being signed for three-year deals, it's not going to happen. So guys like Daniel Murphy, those are 1-2-year deals, 2 years at the max. And, I mean, look what happened to Matt Holliday last year. Still had something left. Didn't get a contract until, second half of the year. There's these older players, I think, is going to be a problem. The second thing is, we learned with Odorizzi and Arrieta, you better sign early if you're a pitcher, because these guys take a long time to really get into shape. And it wasn't Arrieta. It was the guy that went for the Twins and eventually got moved to the Yankees. Was St. Louis. Help me, Tim. Who was it?
I'm lost.
he played for St. Louis, came up through the St. Louis, signed in March with the Twins, paid for a half season there, and then they sold him to the Yankees. That guy. Lance Lynn. Both of those guys got off to horrendous starts. So I don't care if they're working out in Scott Boras' organization and his special camp and so forth. I got to tell you, I mean, general managers are smart. They're going to go, look, he's Lance Lynn. We don't care. We're not going to sign him after a period of time. So I think people need to do a Carlos Santana and sign early.
Yeah, unless you're a top flight middle reliever who you know you'll get a job, because everybody wants to pay, and in some cases overpay, for middle relievers and starting pitchers. And there's not many starting pitchers available out there this year. Corbin picked a heck of a year to earn his free agency, and Kikuchi coming from Japan, I think he's also going to do very well, because the top teams do need starting pitching, and thinking of the Yankees, they're willing to pay for it.
Let's talk about the Yankees. I mean, you gotta like what they did. There's hair all over this one, but James Paxton's a nice pitcher. We can argue he's never pitched over 180 innings in a particular season, but the stuff is premium stuff. I mean, we're talking big time strikeout rate, 11.7 per nine. He only walked 2.4 per nine. Did give up too many home runs, and that's what the 3.76 ERA was driving. But this is a quality pitcher, and the Yankees made the move, and there could be other trades that are out there. And then all of a sudden, these 32-year-old pitchers that are out there, they're not going to get signed. What did you think about Paxton?
I thought it was a good deal. The Yankees have a deep enough bullpen that they can monitor his innings. They can control. You know, they can live with 140 to 160 innings as long as they're all in October. And I think they're going to tailor his workload and everything accordingly, because let's face it, since he became a full-time pitcher in 2014, you know, you're looking at 74, 67, 121, 136. Last year was his highest at 160 innings. But the Yankees know what they're getting, and they know what they're dealing with, and I think they will manage his workload accordingly. I think it's a good deal for the Yankees, and I also like the deal from the Mariners' point of view. I like both pitchers. I think they'll be fine.
So let's talk a little bit more about Paxton. I think one of the things that's encouraging to me, and I don't recall, didn't do a lot of research on this, I don't recall Paxton ever having an arm issue.
No. There's just been a myriad of injuries. Do you realize he's heading into his age 31 season now?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I do know that. But if you're the Yankees, they're acquiring him. I mean, so you're thinking no arm injury. You like the age at 30 years old, that a lot of these guys are having elbow surgeries early, so they're thinking maybe he's past that. And all of his injuries have been back-related, which, you know, always gets you a little worried, but it have been muscular-related, so almost more nicks as opposed to catastrophic type of injury. So, you know, I mean, could he pitch 180, 190 innings? Yeah. Will he need to in that Yankee lineup, in that Yankee rotation? Maybe not.
Well, I think, you know my argument about Jose Altuve, and I can use the same exact argument.
120%, Tim. He's at 120% this year, so take his MVP season and multiply it by 120%, and that's what you're going to get.
Do we have steak and liquor potential on this
one, Rich? Yeah, that's the way I understood it, Timmy.
Okay. No, but you know what? The Yankees don't need Paxton to make it into the playoffs. You know, that's not an issue or a concern. Their offense alone will carry them into the playoffs, Rich. So I think they're going to be careful with Paxton. You know, hey, if they got a playoff spot locked up in the middle of August, are they gonna pitch him seven innings deep for the balance of the season? No, they'll monitor and control his innings so he's ready for the playoffs. That's when the Yankees want Paxton for, is October 1st. And I'd be surprised if he gets much more than 150, 160 innings in. But as long as they're at the right time of the season, that's what the Yankees want.
All right, we're talking baseball, Timmy. Let's turn to the game of fantasy. 150, 160 innings. I like your logic there. That's not good for fantasy owners. I mean, yeah, you like the 11.7 strikeouts per nine, but when you multiply it by 160, and I mean, it's good, not great. The elephant in the room, Timmy, is the fact that he's going to pitch half his games in Yankee Stadium. You don't know. First of all, he gets afraid of Yankee Stadium. We know it's a massive hitter's park, and he's also going to play 18 games against the Boston Red Sox, and that's a premium team. The Tampa Bay Rays are good. It's always tough to pitch in Baltimore. It's a different division than the AL West. I mean, are we worried if we're a dynasty league owner of James Paxton? Are we worried if we're sitting at the draft table? Is Paxton a guy we're going to be targeting?
I'm not going to be, Rich. I have my druthers. It's a big move heading into the Bronx. And I think Paxton is going to be – I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be fine. But there's also a chance that the numbers could end up proving to be a little bit less or poorer than they were last year. The Yankee faithful are great when the team's winning and when things are going good, but they're not afraid to, the boobirds are there. And if he struggles at all, how much slack are they going to cut him? How much did they cut Giancarlo Stanton last year, being one of the best hitters in the game? So I do have some concerns about that first several months in New York, and I hope he gets off to a good start, because if he doesn't, he'll be made aware of it right smartly.
Yeah, I know, and it's the Yankees will boo people out, and it's so will Boston. I mean, they did it with David Price as well. Now David Price is minted because he pitched so well in the World Series, but it's tough playing in these Northeast locations. It's just it's a different level of intensity, and I think you're right. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of negatives. He's a lefty. He's got great stuff. He's coming off a good year, Tim, but man, I don't think you can predict a build of that year going into Yankee Stadium. I don't think you can do that.
No, I'm not predicting. I'm not predicting an improved James Paxton over what we saw last year. I think the numbers could be very, very, very comparable, possibly even worse. But that being said, hey, he could handle it fine and prove his mettle and go out and pitch to the level he has over the past several years and be anointed a savior in New York. You just don't know. But personally, I'm being very cautious with James Paxton. I'm not going to bump him up my draft boards, definitely, because he's with the Yankees.
Well, look, Timmy, we play probabilities. No one can see the future. You have to take a look at what you know and history and things like that. And history, this is a little scary from a fantasy standpoint. And I think you're absolutely being spot on, and that is to be cautious. Even at 160 innings, it was 208 strikeouts, given his crazy strikeout rate. But, Timmy, I mean, what if it goes down back into the 10 level, which is what he did in 2017. All of a sudden, you back off that, and it's 180 strikeouts or something like that. And is that 376 given 23 home runs that he gave up last year? I think that increases in going to Yankees. So there's a lot of red flags for me.
Well, yeah, it's not as if Seattle was a poor team, and he managed 11 wins in his 28 starts last year. Seattle had a pretty good team. You know what I mean? And I know you can't predict wins, but the Yankee faithful is looking at that and saying, hey, we got ourselves a 20-game winner. I wouldn't be that optimistic.
So, Tim, if in the end of 2017, with the 28-year-old James Paxton throwing a 2.98 ERA, striking out 156 innings and 156 batters in 136 innings, and winning 12 games, did you like him less or more than Gerrit Cole at age 26 with a 12-12 record, a 4.26 ERA, yes, 203 innings, but 196 strikeouts, less than a strikeout an inning? Which pitcher, if you can think back to this time last year, did you like better, Gerrit Cole or James Paxton entering the season?
I'm going to say that because I've always had concerns about the innings and the workload that Paxton could handle, I'm going to go with Gerrit Cole on that one.
Even though, and I think the stats line it up, in 2017, James Paxton had a better season.
Yeah, and you know what I'm doing right now? I'm just going to either confirm or deny that, because guess where I am, Rich? I am on Prospect 361 looking at my starting pitcher rankings. And I had Gerrit Cole at 20, and I had James Paxton at 26.
All right, well, it's pretty close. Pretty close.
Yeah.
Now, you also had Gerrit Cole by then. You knew he was with Houston, so which had to give you a boost from being at Pittsburgh. So when you take a look at the return, and that's what I'm trying to get at. So the return of, if we think back, people went crazy about Gerrit Cole and said, oh, my gosh, all you got back was Joe Musgrove and Colin Moran and somebody else that doesn't escapes me at the moment. And then you take a look at who the Yankees gave up. Pretty good pitcher, chance to be a pretty good pitcher with Justin Sheffield. He was their big guy. And I listened to the, you know, as I was driving back from the beach today, I listened to the front office guys, and they were saying, take this for what it's worth, that Jerry DePoto went around every team, and Justin Sheffield was the best return. He was the best player they were able to get back. So do you like that trade? Do you like the Gerrit Cole trade better, or the return, or do you like the return that the Mariners got back better?
Well, we have the advantage or disadvantage of knowing how Moran and Musgrove worked out last year. So that's got to skew the results a little. But if Sheffield can perform to the level that I think he can, and nobody's mentioning Mr. Swanson, but you know what his minor league ERA is? 3.15. A 1.16 whip. And 354 Ks in 357 innings pitched. So Swanson is not chump change. I could see him being a solid number five type starter. So with pitching being in demand, I'm going to say I like Seattle's return a little bit better right now than Pittsburgh's.
I agree. So for those people who are poo-pooing the return, it's a good return. Justin Sheffield, look, those of you think he's a number one, he's not. He's probably a high-end number three, low-end number two kind of guy, kind of maybe a top 40 pitcher in baseball. That's his upside. Swanson's a middle reliever slash swing guy slash number five back of the rotation starter. Yep. And this Thompson fella could be he's the wild card. So when you make trades like this, you're looking for top prospect, you're looking for another major league arm in this particular case, and then you're looking for, you know, the lottery pick. Can this Thompson guy become something? And nobody knows. I mean, I haven't seen him play. He just missed my Yankee top 15. He'll make my Seattle top 15. Dean's skill set there. It's a nice return.
Well, yeah, you know, they got 12 years out of control, okay? Coming back to him, and who knows what could happen as far as Sheffield is concerned. I think there's number two potential sitting there. And for us in our game, it's a huge bonus because I think what we're going to see is we're going to see both Sheffield and Swanson contributing this year. And, of course, we're going to see Paxton contributing. But we've got two more pitchers in the mix. And I wasn't overly convinced that the Yankees were going to be doing all that much with Mr. Sheffield, that they would look at free agents, and I think they're going to. So I think it gives us a couple more options from in the fantasy game, Rich.
Yeah, so I thought Justin Sheffield was probably bringing on a mid-rotation starter at the Yankees. I was worried. Timmy's only 6 feet tall. Gave up a lot of home runs last year. His stuff is not off the charts. It's more low 90s kind of fastball. He's never been able to control his stuff. But I think going to Seattle and the West Coast, I mean, I think all of a sudden you know, again, I'll repeat, instead of a top 50 pitcher, now you're looking at a top 40 type of pitcher. And I think you get that kind of bump with Sheffield going. But again, there's some knocks against this guy. I mean, the short stature is there.
Oh yeah, he could end up in the bullpen at some point in time. We could see issues like we've seen with Marcus Stroman. We don't know, but what it does do is it gives us an opportunity to find out, and we'll find out fairly quickly. And he's definitely somebody now that I believe you should be targeting in all redraft formats, down to probably, I wouldn't say 10 team, but definitely down to 12 team formats. He should be in your lineup somewhere.
Yeah, so this is what I wrote about Justice Sheffield. I have to rewrite it now. He's the Mariners. I said, the Yankees will not play games with Sheffield, and if he's ready to break camp next March, he will. I'm not sure I would be investing in him in 2019, as I'm not sure the control is there, says Rich Wilson. Plus, with my concern about him being homer prone, the combination could have negative ramification for fantasy owners. So it was a hold for me, Timmy, with the Yankees.
Right.
It's more of a buy with Seattle. I'm not full tilt in like I was with Walker Buehler, but I'm a little bit more comfortable with Justice Sheffield.
Well, I think the big thing, and it's something that I've played for years, is opportunity. Yeah. And I think the opportunity is going to be there, and we'll find out how it shakes down. But I know I'll be targeting him now, late in drafts and redraft leagues, whereas if he was still in the Yankees system heading into spring, he'd be waiver wire material if and when he got called up.
Yeah, if I can just give just a little education, I think this is I find this interesting. Again, I was listening to the front office guys, and Jim Bowden went crazy about, you know, Justice Sheffield is not a reliever. People are saying he's going to be a reliever. He is not a reliever. I've been a general manager, blah, blah, blah. He goes off on his tangent.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tim, the reality is, and I all respect to, no disrespect to Jim Bowden, the reality is Justice Sheffield has reliever risk. And let me explain what that means. And again, all due respect to Mr. Jim Bowden. There's three reasons why a pitcher has reliever risk. It doesn't mean there's going to be a reliever. They have risk. One is they have a crazy delivery, a very violent delivery. Now, and most guys who have a violent delivery wind up in the pen because they can't control their stuff. There are always exceptions, such as Max Scherzer. Max Scherzer is probably going to be a Hall of Fame guy, but he had reliever risk because he was coming to league, and he defied the odds. That's one. Two is you don't have a third pitch, and that usually is a changeup, and you only have like a fastball slider kind of combination. That's that when you read my stuff and you talk to scouts, when they say reliever risk, don't have a third pitch. The third is size, and when you're 6 feet tall, doesn't matter if you got four pitches, you got smooth delivery, you have reliever risk because you will be homer prone. And again, everybody points to Pedro Martinez and goes, look, Pedro Martinez is a Hall of Fame. Absolutely. And there's always those guys that defy that. Walker Buehler's not a tall guy. But if you're just looking at probabilities, there is reliever risk there. So it is not out of the question. You brought up Marcus Stroman. It's not out of the question that one day Justice Sheffield might be in the pen. Now, he could be a dynamic closer because the stuff's going to play up, particularly as a lefty. But it is out there, Tim.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt about it. What would somebody have said to you, okay, if I had said to you last year at this time that Carlos Martinez is going to finish up the last two months of the season as a relief pitcher? You would have laughed at me. You would have said, I'm crazy. But, in fact, where did Carlos Martinez finish the season? As a reliever. You don't
Carlos
know.
Carlos Martinez, as with Lance McCullers, always had reliever risk. Doesn't mean they're going to be a reliever, but Carlos Martinez has an incredibly violent delivery, and it's starting to play havoc with his control. Lance McCullers never had a great third pitch, has a little bit of violence in his delivery, and I bet you when he comes back from Tommy John surgery, he's going to be put in the bullpen, which he could be a dynamic back of the bullpen guy. there's no harm in that, but just I just wanted to point out when you read hear scouts talk and they say reliever risk, you can't dismiss that, right? Because there is some chance that there is. Maybe I think at Justice Sheffield, the Mariners will do everything they can to make him a starter, and just with Marcus Stroman, he could have a couple 3 years where he is pretty good. But just know that it's out
yeah.
there.
Yeah, that risk is definitely there. I agree with you, Rich.
Timmy, when we get back, we're going to be talking all fantasy, and it is going to be about the NL Central.
Sounds good, Rich. Looking forward to it.
Tell me what I think we're going to do, because we're stacked with fantasy stuff probably from here until the start of the season. If you're okay and up to it, we're going to do the prospects as a kind of intermittent or intermediate kind of podcast, where we might do like an hour long podcast in the middle of the week where we're talking about these prospects, so we can dedicate a whole hour and not be exhausted talking fantasy and then talking, you know, an hour prospects at the end. Does that work for you?
Yeah, it does work for me, Rich. And I think one of the things that we forgot in our equation this year is that you moved your list from 10 players
yeah.
to 15. And yeah. when you start adding those five extra players, you know, hey, you're not going to discuss all five of them, but two or three of them, and then you multiply them by five teams. So you're looking at an additional 10 to 15 players to comment on. Plus, occasionally we go off the rails, just occasionally. And you add it all up, and it makes for a long show. So, yeah, no, that's fine with me. I like the idea.
Good, because I think we – sorry, guys. I know I was looking for more prospect. Tim and I both emailed each other and said that was exhausting. So it does wear us out, man. So I don't know when we'll do it. It won't be this week. It might be next week, Tim, because I'll be
yep.
you know, flying all around this week. So but anyway, so look forward to the AL Central probably week after next. But Timmy, this has been a popular topic, and that's what I call 30 questions. It's really, we're going to go through each of the teams. We're going to start off with the NL Central and just talk about specific fantasy questions that I have. And this is a way to talk about different players. And I think every team's got a handful of lots of fantasy questions about that. But I think in particular, the NL Central's got some very intriguing types of questions. So let's get started.
Sounds good, Rich. I'm ready to roll.
Chicago Cubs, Chris Bryant was not good last year, Timmy. 13 home runs, 59 runs, yeah. 52 RBIs, 102 games. If I looked at Fangraphs, and his strikeout rate and his walk rate were basically the same as they were in 2017 and 16. The big question that I'm telling you, Tim, everybody's going to have this question when they're sitting at the draft table: does he bounce back?
Well, you know, I think the potential is there to see that occur. But you know what? He was sidelined an awful long time last year with that shoulder issue. And one thing that I'm going to be watching and monitoring very, very closely in the first 2-3 weeks of spring training is to see how that shoulder is holding up. I'm definitely concerned, but if he's healthy, yeah, I think he can bounce back. And you know what's funny, Rich, is I was going through and I was looking. Remember last year at this time, the year before, we were saying how deep third base is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, since we last took a look at third base, we've seen Jake Lamb miss most of a season. Josh Donaldson hasn't played in a while. Longoria, his career seems to be fading a little bit. Sano in Minnesota can't stay healthy and can't hit. Turner missed half a season. Kyle Seager in Seattle at .220 batting average. Third base is not as deep as it once was, and in addition to the fact it's not as deep, first base is ugly this year. So corner infield is going to be very interesting. A healthy Bryant could move could move your team a long way up the boards if he is healthy.
Yeah, just to let you know, those are season. I'm trying to look at last season and the stats for last thing. I'm supposed to be looking at a 3-year average. Oh, that's, I'm sorry, that's projection. My bad. All right, I'm looking at the last year's the top performers at third base, Timmy. So Nolan Arenado, Jose Ramirez. Guess who number three was? Chris Bryant. No, it can't be. That's 2017. Let me look at 2018, Timmy. My bad. All right. Jose Ramirez, okay. Javier Baez, Nolan Arenado, Alex Bregman. Those are four pretty good third basemen, correct?
That is correct. Who are the next five or six?
Am I looking at this right? Did Matt Carpenter hit 36 home runs?
Yeah, he did. He hit them all in the space of about 3 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. He had himself a heck of a year, yeah.
257 batting average, 374 on base. Interesting. He's number five. Eugenio Suarez at with 34 home runs. Wow. Number six, Anthony Rendon comes in at seven with another solid year, 308, 373, and a 535 slug with 24 home runs. Then you start to get – so those are what, eight, Tim? And you can
argue down about seven or eight.
Yeah, so Matt Carpenter. And then it starts to get interesting. Then it's got Miguel Andujar. Can he repeat?
Yeah.
Can he build off of it? Max Muncy. I mean, good Lord, Tim. We're going to talk hours about him. Matt Chapman. That guy had a nice – so there's something potentially. Travis Shaw, Mike Moustakas, Jurickson Profar. There's a lot of questions after those top seven, eight. So, yeah, you're right. Third base is not deep.
Well, no, you start looking at Kyle Seager in home runs at third was ranked 10th. And with that, you got a .221 batting average. There's a pile of question marks. You know, Candelaria and Camargo, third base isn't what it once was. And, you know, you take Adrian Beltre out of the mix and some of those other players I mentioned, and the corner infield slot is going to be a very, very interesting one this year when you combine it with the challenges at first base. So I'm looking forward to getting some mocks in and seeing how the corner infield spot shakes down in mock drafts. And it might shape how I accordingly draft heading into next year.
Let's go back to Chris Bryant, Timmy. So you said you want to watch that first 2 or 3 weeks. So let's say first 3 weeks he plays in eight games. That's about what he'll play in. And let's say he hits a home run. Let's say he's only batting 230. Yeah, strikeout, some walks, the normal kind of stuff. Well, what do you make of that? Does that tickle your fancy? I mean, are you convinced he's going to bounce back? I mean, what do you do?
Well, what I'm looking for is that he's playing every day. What I'm not looking for is the news that he had to skip a start because his shoulder was sore.
So you're not looking for production. You're looking for word is he's healthy, he's playing. Okay.
If he is,
then where do you draft him?
I think you can probably get him third round, and I think third round is a bargain. I don't think you have to go much earlier than that because there's going to be a slew of people chasing speed, stolen bases. So I think you can probably wait till the third round. And I think if he is healthy, he can earn you a nice profit drafting him there.
We'll see if he lasts to the third round. You heard it from the great Tim McLeod. So let's go on, Timmy. Have we overvalued Ian Happ? Look, he's only 24, but the power dropped off significantly. Did I write down how much power? So it was the amount of home runs dropped significantly. But here's the real thing, Timmy. He struck out 36% of the time. I didn't realize he struck out 30% of the time in his rookie year in 2017, which wasn't good. But if it wasn't for a .362 batting average of balls in play, Timmy, I bet you a dollar he would have been demoted. Is Ian Happ any good?
Well, I think if you look at his minor league history, his strikeout rates were relatively stable. The only year that we saw an increase was last year, a big increase. And he went from 129 strikeouts to 167 and roughly the same number of bats, 364, 387. His homers fell from 24 to 15. The kid's only 24. I'm not quite ready to write off his career based on what happened last year. I think at the end of the day, it could prove to be an aberration. At some point in time, what I would like to see is I'd like to see Joe Maddon play him every day and not sit him for two, start him for two, sit him for one, start him for three. You know, get into a regular routine. I think that affected his play. And from the Cubs' perspective, he better be able to hit, because right now they got Almora and Hayward penciled into two slots in that outfield, and we know they can't hit. So somebody better be able to do it, and I'm hoping it's Ian Happ.
Excuse me, Tim. What makes you think Ian Happ is going to get full-time playing time? I mean, Joe Maddon's not going to change. He's done this his whole career.
Well, it's definitely concerning. But at the same point in time, can the Cubs win with the production out of Almora and Hayward? I don't think they can. You know, you're looking at, I think last year the combined total of home runs was just into double digits. It was dreadful. I think Hayward was good for seven, and I think Almora might have been good for four or five home runs. You can't run two-thirds of your outfield with those two guys. Then you put Kyle Schwarber into left field, and he can't catch. Okay, so there's definitely concerns. Definitely concerns as far as I'm concerned. I think they have to find a way to get that bat into the lineup somehow.
Yeah, I don't know, Timmy. 36% strikeout rate, 30% strikeout rate in 2017 is propped up by a batting average of balls in play. I don't know, man. I'm worried. He's only turned 25 next year, but first of all, I mean, Ian Happ, I bet you, is he going to even be drafted in the first 15 rounds next year?
No, probably not. I think that's a fair bet. But at the same point in time, Ian Happ also walked 70 times last year in 387 at-bats. So you're looking at a guy on pace for 100-plus walks. If he can reduce those strikeout rates by a bit, especially in on-base percentage leagues, there's value sitting there.
Yeah, not if he's hitting 200, Timmy. If he hits 200, he's going to be demoted. We saw it with Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, there's definitely risk involved, but for a late-round pick, I'll take a chance on the upside versus the risk and a bounce back.
Let's move to the Cincinnati Reds, Tim. Two questions about, and we got to start with Joey Votto. First, what happened, and is he going to recover next season?
Well, he dealt with a leg contusion, but do you realize that he went 36 games without a home run? His second half was absolutely dreadful. Granted, some of that has to do with the leg contusion. I'm convinced of it, but I'm not quite ready to write Joey Votto off yet. I think we've got a potential bounce back in the power department heading into this year. If he can't hit 20 home runs next year, healthy Joey Votto.
He's 35.
Yeah, but, you know, you look at his history and, you know, hey, the on-base will be there. I'm going to pencil Votto in for low 20s in homers this year and write last year off as a total fluke. I can't see how his power could fall off and continue to stay, you know, that low for 2 years in a row. It's never happened in his career, and I think he's got a little bit left in the tank. And I probably won't own him because in on-base percentage leagues with that 400-plus OBP, somebody will be buying him still fairly early, counting on the bounce back. But, you know, 29, 29, 36, 12. Which one of those is the outlier?
32, 33, 34, 35 next year, Tim. Which one of those is not the outlier? It's 35. He's going to be 35 years old. I was trying to relate it. It didn't work, Tim. He's going to be 35,
yeah.
Tim.
I know what you're saying.
Over under 20 home runs.
Over. Convincingly over.
Okay. All right. Let's get it better. 25, over under 25.
I'll go under.
Oh, okay. Over under 23.
you're really trying to. I'll go over on the 22.
I'll go under on 22?
Yeah, 22. I'll go over.
I'll go under. Put it on the books. I mean, steak and liquor.
Gun like dinner. I like getting off to an early start on my freebie meal.
Yeah. I know 22 seems
Jimmy
like a chip
four
shot.
Pineapple crust, Rich.
Yeah, 22 seems like a chip shot for Joey Votto, except, I don't know, Timmy, 35 years old. Jeez. Maybe it's just all come crashing down. All right.
Maybe it will, Rich. I get your argument, and it's definitely a valid one. I just don't believe that it will fall off like that. And you know what? If I end up losing on this one, I definitely have no problems owning up and paying up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the history. I mean, he had a couple of outlier seasons. 14 home runs in 2012 when he only had was 111 games, and he bounced back the next year and hit 24, which you would win the bet if we have a bounce back in 2013. But it was really the outlier season was 2017 where he blew up the 36 home runs. Well, he had 37 home runs in 2010, but I don't know. I don't know, Tim.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Being that the Reds are on the hook for the next, 2022, they're on the hook till the end of 2023. The Reds better hope he's got something left in the tank, or that 20 plus million a year is going to hurt.
They have him in his contract. 23?
Next year is 25 mil. 2020 is 25. 2021 and 2022 are both 25. 2023 is 25 mil, and 2024 is a 20 mil club option with a $7 million buyout. They're on the hook through the 2023 season. They've got
all right, so he's
five
19,
more
so
years.
19, 20, 21, 22, 25 years. So he's 30. He'll be 40 years old, Timmy. That's going to hurt.
That will probably be one of the last long-term over 30 contracts we see in the game, Rich.
Wow. I knew he signed. I didn't realize I first didn't realize he was going to be 35 next year. I thought it was more like 32, 33, and boy, it's not good. Boy, it's not good. Let's move on, Timmy. After hitting 30 home runs in 2017, Scheffler only hit 17 last season. Sure, it was 100 and less plate appearances. But what's going on, Tim?
Well, I went back and I took a look just to humor myself at my outfield rankings last year, Rich. And I remember discussing this with you, and I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. Hopefully I don't strain anything in the process. But I had him ranked number 78 last year in the outfielders. And the reason for it was April, May of 2017, he hit 16 home runs. The balance of 27 in the last 4 months of the season, he hit 4, 3, 3, and 4. And if you add 4 times 6 is, you know, roughly 24 home runs. He had two good months, and basically right now what he's doing is he's holding a spot for the eventual arrival of Nick Senzel.
Yeah, I'm trying to find Nick Senzel on the outfield. Not third base. I know we talked about this last week. Interesting.
Yeah, no, because you got Eugenio Suarez sitting there, and unless they move Suarez, who's just signed a 7-year, $66 million extension in 2018, he signed through 2024. So I think Senzel is going to roll into Scheffler's spot.
Yeah, so Tim, you had Scott Scheffler at 78, and the NFBC had him at 71. So you had him a little lower than the industry did. So well done there.
Yeah, I just wasn't a big fan because I just saw it as being a one-off based on that hot start he got in 2017. And it was hot. Like I said, he had 16 home runs at the end of May, and it looked like he was going to challenge the 50 home run mark. And then he bounced back to being steady Scott Schebler and got his 30 or so in.
I don't think we should look back at these lists, Tim, because there's some ugly stuff in here.
you know, Rich, the term cherry picking, okay, will be used by me in a rather huge way, okay? How's that?
Tim, do you remember where you had Yasmani Tomas ranked?
I don't even want to go there. Where did I have him, Rich?
47th, Timmy. You had him ranked as the 47th top outfielder. He, the NFBC had him at 81. That was ugly.
Yeah. No, how about Byron Buxton? You want to throw more ugliness out there?
The industry, everybody loved Byron Buxton going in last year. So,
right.
You had him at 17. The industry had him at 15. The NFBC had him at 15. So you win there. So.
There's no prize for that victory, Rich.
Yeah, there's no prize for the Yasmani Tomas debacle. That's pretty funny, Timmy. I feel bad for you there.
You know, I honestly didn't think the Diamondbacks being on the hook for that much money, I didn't think they would punish him in that fashion. But guess what? I was wrong big time.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to know where you had Mitch Haniger.
I know it wasn't high, Rich. I know that.
Hey, let's give you some kudos, though. Nick Markakis, much higher. You had him 18 spots higher than the NFBC. Boog Powell, who had a nice little season. He had him 46 strokes higher. Leonis Martin, who had a really nice little season until he got injured. So, Timmy, there was way more wins than there were losses there, but that's Mitch Haniger and Yasmani Tomas.
Yeah.
They're pretty funny. So,
you know where I stood on Haniger. He was a big part
for
of
sure.
the steak and liquor situation. Yeah, and I choked on that one big time.
Well, I picked Yasmani Tomas, I'll never forget, in the Dynasty League fourth because that's where I thought he should have been picked, and I hated it as soon as I made the selection. I hated it. And yeah, you know, guys like Schwarber on the I just still kills me. Mark the time 9:52 p.m. Eastern time on the 25th. Let's never utter the word Yasmani Tomas ever again.
But he hit 31 home runs in 2016. I agree. We won't mention his name anymore.
Never again, Timmy. Poor guy will never see the major leagues again.
No, he's joined the ranks of Rosny Castillo. How's that?
And it's a shame. I mean, Rosny Castillo had a nice season last year, Timmy.
He did. He's playing well. He's doing exactly what we figured he'd do. He's a solid player who will never see a game in Major League Baseball with the Boston Red Sox.
He makes too much money, and the
yep.
Red Sox can. So just so everybody knows, they're still on the hook for Pena, but if he's not on the 40-man roster, then it doesn't count from a penalty standpoint. So they don't have to use his number when they're doing their like how much over there, and they're way over the the threshold, Timmy. So if they trade him, then that money all of a sudden hits the book. So he's dead man walking.
Well, yeah, they'll call me up before they call Rosny Castillo. Bad heart and all, Rich.
319 batting average, a 360 on base percentage, 13 stolen bases, 5 home runs. Kid hit.
Scored a pile of runs. I think he was batting up at the top of their lineup.
It's amazing. 2017, I'm just looking at it. He pretty much did the same thing. 314, 350, 507 slug. So, I mean, he's doing what he can do, but he's unfortunately, as I'll say it again, he's dead man walking.
Yeah, oh yeah, he will see a game in the majors when he becomes a free agent, whenever that is. Not before.
I wonder whether I don't have Cott's contract in front of me. Wonder when that will be. So Scott Schebler, more 2000 in 2019. Is it more 2017 or 2018? It's probably sounding like more 2017. Excuse me, 2018. More of the same last year. Not very good.
Yeah, I'm betting on less than last year. Yeah, I think they're going to get Senzel up fairly early, and I think I'd be surprised if he hits 15 home runs, Rich.
Let's move to the Milwaukee Brewers. This is not a fantasy question, Tim, but I have to ask. The Brewers came close to the World Series last season. Will they break through in 2019 or fall back?
I think they'll be roughly in the same situation that they were last year. The deciding factor for me is, you know, can Jules Chichin, can he repeat? Jimmy Nilsson, can he return? Those are some big questions, but I think it depends on three pitchers as to their eventual fate, because I don't see the Brewers going out and buying any pitching, but I think it depends on Woodruff, Peralta, and Burns. And if one or two of those guys steps up and performs well, I think it puts Milwaukee in a really good spot. Their offense is really, really solid. It's a great offense, and that won't be the problem. It'll be the pitching. So I think it's going to depend on those three young pitchers, and if they step up, I think it puts them in exactly the same situation they were in this past year, Rich.
So, all right. Yoli Sesshin, Tim, 4.03 FIP. He had a 3.50 ERA, a 4.03 FIP, and the Brewers. Padres, he was a 3.89 average, 4.26, excuse me, ERA, 4.26 FIP. So there's some correction coming with Yoli. He's not that good. So I think we can agree
not
to that. So let's go back to your three guys. Jimmy, I'm asking you to look into a crystal ball. Do we see Jimmy Nilsson this year? We have to, right?
We have to. If we don't see him this year, it's because he's retired.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be tough to come back after 2 years. That's a shame. And he really broke out in 2017. So then out of those three young pitchers you talked about, Timmy, if you're at the draft table, who are you investing in?
I love that strikeout for us. The strikeout numbers we've seen from Peralta. So he's definitely one guy that I'm targeting. And my second target would probably be young Mr. Burns.
Yeah, Corbin Burns would be my thought there. I mean, Freddie Peralta, yeah, he's kind of big guy, kind of came out of nowhere. Really started to put it together late in his minor league career, but Burns has got really, really good stuff. So my bet is on Burns. Let's move to Orlando Arcia, Tim. We started to see some, with the emphasis on some progress in the second half. He hit 280 in August and September. He showed hardly any power. The speed kind of went away. He's only 24. Do we finally start to see some real progression next season, Timmy, or is this just more of the same?
Well, you know, in 2017, he hit 15 homers, stole 14 bases. That was in his age 23 season. So we've already seen what he could do as a 23-year-old. That was pretty good. You know, he hit three homers in the postseason. I think the potential is there, but the leash is going to be short. And if Mr. Dubon hadn't hurt himself last year and torn his ACL up, I don't even think this would be a question. I think the leash is short, and if Mauricio Dubon is healthy, the leash will be very, very short. He's either going to succeed or they're going to bring this other kid up, and we'll see more speed in the game.
I don't understand. In 2017, as you said, 15 home runs, 14 stolen bases, strikeout percent of 18.2, walk rate, didn't walk a whole lot. But he hit 277 with a 407 slug. Mm-hmm. And what happened? I mean, like, why did he get demoted? I mean, yeah, his strikeout rate goes up, and he wasn't playing full-time in 2017. I don't think they've done him justice either by really just giving it to him and saying, hey, go figure it out. I mean, defensively, Timmy, he's the best they can put out there. He's a really good defensive player. Why not just let him figure it out offensively and take – you know, they've got enough bats in that lineup. Why not just let him use his glove?
That to me makes total sense, and that's what I hope they do heading into 2019, because defensively he can handle it. Let him figure out the offense. The only thing is, with Devon sitting there, like last year, up until when he hurt himself, he had 4 home runs, 6 stolen bases, and a .922 ops at AAA. If he's back healthy, they will have an option. And I think they will give RC a time, limited time to sort it out. But I think if they get to the stage where they bring up Mauricio, it's over. I think they'll give Devon a real serious opportunity to take and run with the job. So I think the first 2 months of the season are crucial, and I hope he can bounce back. We've seen what he can do in the past, but again, Milwaukee proved last year the patience is starting to get pushed a tad.
So Tim is all over Devon. You heard it here. It's one of Tim's deep sleepers. It's got to be Timmy, right? You've tipped your hand here early on.
Yeah, I've also invested in Orlando Arcia, so I'm doubling down on that one. One of the two of them, I think, is going to provide some very good returns.
Yeah, you're okay. Well, when we get back, we're going to scoot on to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Let's hit some pitchers here, Timmy, with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Chris Archer. I'm not even sure what's happened to Chris Archer. I don't get it. He was one of the best pitchers in baseball, and it's just fallen on tough times. I mean, look, we studied him left and right, and strikeouts are there. He's not walking a whole lot of guys. His batting average of balls in play has been high. But the end results from a fantasy standpoint has been terrible. He just has not been good. So give me his stat line for 2019, wins, strikeouts, and ERA.
I'll go 10 to 12 wins, 3.95 ERA, and 220 strikeouts.
So that's pretty much more of the same.
Pretty much more of the same. Well, you know what? We saw him post a 4.02 ERA in 2016. We saw him post a 4.07 ERA in 2017. He was hurt in 2018, and dealing with the groin strain, posted a 4.31 ERA. So I think the ERA is going to be better. But I think what you're looking at is a pitcher who's going to throw 20 to 30 strikeouts more than innings pitched with an ERA somewhere in the 4 area. And you know, Pittsburgh isn't going to win 100 games. You know, you look at Archer's history. Do you realize that Archer, his best season in wins is 12? Followed by 2.10s and 2.9s.
Yeah, well, he played on some lousy Rays teams. He played on some lousy Rays teams. I mean, it's funny. I mean, the analytics love this guy, right? I mean, his FIP is always three-quarters of a run lower than his ERA, and you love the strikeouts. You love the low walk rates. His home run per nine has always been his bugaboo, at least over the last 3 years. If he gets that under control, he's better, but his ground ball rate is low and his fly ball rate is high. So, I mean, that's the problem. He can't keep the ball in the ballpark. And if he corrects that problem, then all of a sudden he can be one of the best. It looks like on paper, one of the best pitchers back again.
Yeah, he could be, but history says right now, look at somewhere in the area of a 4 ERA, and that's what you're going to get, and a ton of strikeouts.
Does Nick Kingham, Tim, please tell me yes, he finally gets the chance to pitch in the major leagues? I should have qualified this because this is a perfect time for you to come in. Yes, he'll get a chance to pitch, but it'll be in AAA. So I'm going to qualify. Will he finally get a chance to pitch in the major leagues next year?
You know me too well, Rich. You really do.
Yeah.
Okay. That was set up so perfect, okay? And I was ready to pounce with that big move, but you shut me down, okay? You know what? He had a great debut last year. He had 4 mediocre starts. He pitched a really good game against the Cubs, and then Nova was healthy, so they demoted him. He was inconsistent last year. They brought him up. He looked great at times. He looked absolutely lost at times. And heading into the season, he's your swing guy. He's your number 6 starter, I think. He's going to be behind Archer, Taillon, Trevor Williams, Joe Musgrove, and Ivan Nova. There's your 5 starters. Kingham is number 6. And unfortunately, I think It is what it is. Barring injury, he's going to be your swing guy.
That's a real shame, Timmy. This kid has nothing left to prove in AAA. He needs to get the opportunity. I'm an owner, so you know, so I will admit to that. But he's 27 years old, Timmy. He needs to have the chance to pitch in the big leagues.
Yeah, he could be retired before he uses up his service eligibility. Let me see here.
Yeah.
2024, he's a free agent, so that's another 5 years. He'll be heading into his age 33 season as a free agent, Rich.
It's tough, Tim. It's tough.
It is. But
it's a kid.
But you know what? Barring injury, I just can't see who's. Unless Joe Musgrove doesn't prove to be healthy because he went through that dirt.
Yeah, but he's not that good either. So, I mean, Joe Musgrove's a four. So the problem is, Archer's pitching like a four. Taillon's probably pitching like a 2-3, so he's good. Who else do we have out there? Nova, I mean, come on. I mean, Nova's a 3-4. I mean, they just don't have enough pitching in that rotation.
Well, and you know what? They're paying Nova, $8.5 million in 2019 as he heads into his free agent season. So, you know, assuming the Pirates do what they do, if Nova gets off to a hot start, it wouldn't surprise me if they moved him, okay? They might even move him this offseason. You know, he's on such a team-friendly contract. And that could be the opportunity for Kingham to get into that rotation. But as it sits right now, unless Musgrove isn't ready to go after that surgery, and it's supposed to be 6 weeks of rehab, and he'll be ready to go, I just don't see a place for him right now.
Who had the surgery? I'm sorry, I missed that one.
Joe Musgrove.
Yeah.
He had surgery to repair his abdominal wall. But they're saying 6 weeks of rehab, so on or close to a regular schedule for 2019 spring training. So, you know, it's all about if Musgrove is healthy in the spring, and it looks like he will be.
Yeah, Ivan Nova's been the guy that has always mystified me, Timmy. I mean, it's a kid that doesn't strike out anybody, doesn't walk anybody, but he just seems like he gets by on weak contact, and you always worry when that happens because, you know, the older you get, and let me see how old he is. I mean, he is 31, so he's going into his age 32 years. His birthday's in January. That's one of the things that goes, man. A weak contact turns into hard contact when you get older and the velocity starts to reduce. And I don't know. It just doesn't feel good.
No, it doesn't. He allowed 171 hits last year in 161 innings. That's not a good trend. But again, you're talking the Pittsburgh Pirates, and they're on the hook for $8.5 million. They're not going to walk away from that. There is no way. They'll find some way to do something with that. And Kingham is at league minimum. So who's going to get the playing time if they're on the roster?
I'm looking at the ERA. So 417, 414, 419. So Ivan Nova is a below replacement level pitcher. I mean, that's a below average. That's a number four. Why pay him $8.5 million? Why not move it, at least move half of it, eat half of it, and throw Kingham in there? I mean, you have to think that King could do that.
Well, yeah, because Alan Hansen is their starting second baseman, right? Oops.
Yeah. Oops. Yeah. Well, he's in San Francisco, I think, last I remember. So, Garrett Cole was
exactly
their one, and now he's the number one guy in Houston. It's just ridiculous. It's got to suck to be a Pittsburgh Pirate fan. I mean, I'm sorry. It must be rough.
Well, yeah. When you go into every year knowing that you have the potential to be the best of the second tier.
Yeah.
And
finally, Josh Bell, Timmy, the ability to control the strike zone is bordering on elite. This is a kid that strikes out very little, walks a lot. But where did the power go? 26 home runs in 2017, 12 last year. Do we see the return of the power? Do we finally see Josh Bell turning to the player that at least I thought it was when he was coming through the minor leagues, both average and power at first base?
Well, I'm trying to acquire him wherever I can. I bought him in the XFL draft in Arizona. You know, the walks were up, the strikeouts were down. You know, you look at the fly ball rates, they were actually up. I don't know what happened last year, but the kid's 6'4", 235 pounds. As you mentioned, he's got solid, solid strike zone judgment. So I'm thinking a bounce back is in order for Josh Bell, and I'm buying.
I totally agree with you, Timmy. We are in a violent agreement, which means everybody sell.
He's no yes, Manny Thomas. By the way, I looked up Rodney Castillo while we were talking.
Uh-huh.
$11 million this year, and 2020 is $13.5 million.
Oh, poor guy. Yeah, it'll be 32. I mean, it's just. Yeah, I mean, I'd say poor guy. I mean, he's laughing all the way to the bank.
He's not
but
poor.
Yeah, he's not poor, but that's not what he thought was going to happen. So, oh well. Let's move to the final team here in the NL Central, and we'll wrap it up, Timmy. And it is the St. Louis Cardinals.
Hey.
I got bunches of pictures here, Timmy. Alex Reyes. Help me, Timmy. What's the stat line for 2019? I'm going to add a category in here for you. Innings pitched, wins, strikeouts, and ERA.
145 innings pitched, 13 wins, 175 strikeouts, and a 3.45 ERA.
So you're looking for good things from young Mr. Reyes.
I am looking for huge things from Mr. Reyes. I drafted him. In the magazine mock draft, and I'm just trying to find out what my comments were on Mr. Reyes, but I believe they were somewhere along the lines of, remember when he was a top-rated prospect? He still is. I'm very, very bullish on Alex Reyes. You know, last year, you know, in 23 innings pitched, he didn't allow an earned run, struck out 44. Seven hits, seven walks in 23 innings, you know, on his rehab. He looked like he was all world, and I think he will be. The torn lat, that, you know, a bad break.
So,
I'm reading that one.
Let me add my commentary, Tim. It sucked.
Mm-hmm.
It just sucked. As an owner of Alex Reyes,
yeah.
I didn't even get him in for that pretty good start because, as you recall, it's like, okay, we're bringing him up. Like, what? In a weekly league, which I had him in, you didn't get a chance to play him. And then you're all jonesed up to bring him in, and he's gone for the season. It's like, what?
Well, yeah, you got four innings in if you were lucky enough to start him. But they were shutout innings, if that counts.
I know.
I think two hits, two walks. No, I'm all over Alex Reyes. I think he is going to be an ace-caliber pitcher, and I think he starts his march on that path this year.
Does Jordan Hicks get the chance to close in 2019? This is a team with the Cardinals that they think they can compete. So they might bring in a big time closer, but does Jordan Hicks get a chance to close?
Well, as things sit right now, yeah, I would have to say he is the closer, but what is really interesting, is, just this evening. And it's funny because I wrote him down as an option, but apparently, the Cardinals, Mets, and Phillies are looking at Andrew Miller. So, I think he's in line for saves unless the Cards make a decision to go after a closer. And, you know, there's lots of guys out there. But at the same point in time, the Cards, you know, they got Dakota Hudson. I know he's going to be penciled in to supposedly start. But, you know, Hudson, Luke Gregerson will be healthy. Brevia is fine as a seventh, eighth inning guy. Ponce de Leon. I don't know. I could see the Cardinals going one of two ways, but I think they're going to give Hicks a shot unless they go hog wild and bring in a proven closer. And I don't think they will. I think they'll bring in an Andrew Miller. They might look at Cody Allen if the price is right. Maybe Zach Britton. I don't think they're gonna chase hard for an established closer, though. I think they'll give the kid a shot. That's my gut feeling.
If Luke Gregerson closes every game for the St. Louis Cardinals and gets an unprecedented 162 saves, I mean, let's say they run the table, and I don't own him because I refuse to own him, I won't feel bad at all. I hate that guy. He is my Scott Baker. I don't know the guy from Hole in the Wall. I have chased saves with him for 7-8 years. I think I've gotten 4. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done, Tim.
Yeah. It is painful because
nope.
He's been in situations so many times in his career, okay, where the saves, the opportunities were there. And other than, I believe, one season, and
that's
that was
right.
probably the season you passed on him, Rich.
That's right.
He's just never, ever, you know, he's pitched very well in an eighth inning role, but you get him into the ninth, and other than 2015 with Houston when he saved 31 games, other
yep.
than that, his save totals 2-0-9-4-3-31-15-1. And last year, it was the grand total of 1.
Yeah, I got suckered into the 31 save season.
Mm.
I'm sure I had on a number of teams the final year because it was cheap saves. I've had him where he's gone into the year as a sleeper for saves. I've drafted him there. I've drafted him when he
mm-hmm.
came in looking like he was going to be the closer. I've owned him all the time, and I've done, Timmy. I owned him last year. NFBC draft on hole 50, if it's the 50th round and he's still on the board, I am not going to take him, Timmy. I refuse to own the man.
Well, you know what? Based on your history, I got no problems with that, Rich. I've owned Scott Baker and Roger Pavlik and invested my life's earnings in both over the years. So I know where you're coming from, and I feel for you. And if you're in a holes league, yeah, throw a buck down it. But if you're not in the holes league, I agree with you.
No, I'm done. Okay, final question, Timmy. And this hurts. This one's hurt because I think I know the answer here. Is Adam Wainwright
yes.
ownable in a 15-team mixed league next season? Yes, he is.
No, he's not, Rich.
I know. It's sad,
I think your starting rotation is going to be Carmart, Michaelis, Flaherty, Waka, and Reyes. In addition to that, you've got Gomber, Gant, Luke Weaver, Dakota Hudson, and Adam Wainwright. I think the odds are stacked against him getting very many starts next year, Rich.
He's 37 years old. Timmy, I don't know what they do with this guy.
Well, they re-signed him, but I think it was a $2 million contract, I believe it is.
Yeah.
So, hey.
In October 28th, $2 million base salary. So is he there just to be a mop-up guy, and he's a charming guy, very good in the clubhouse. Is that what they brought him in for?
That and the fact that they're going to need probably at some point in time due to injury, they'll need a starter. And Adam Wainwright is the sort of guy that will sit on the waiver wire as a sixth starter, mop-up, swingman, whatever you want to call him. And at some point in time, if there is an injury to to someone in that rotation, he will get some opportunities. Odds are good right now. I'll give you huge odds. At some point in time next year, Adam Wainwright will be on my waiver wire article. How's that?
Yeah, that's probably true. I gotta tell you, Timmy, as go back to Luke Gregerson, if you put Luke Gregerson
mm-hmm.
on your waiver wire, he's going to get edited
yeah.
out. He will be edited out. No, on second thought, no, he will not. There will be a bold comment that says, editor's note, do not pick this guy up.
Tim is a dumbass.
I'm never going to say that. I'm just going to say, editor's note, you're making a huge mistake picking this guy up. I have the scars to show it.
Yeah, I was thinking for a second when you first started to say that, you're not going to let me off that cheap, Rich. I know you're not. Okay. No, no way.
Bold, maybe and italics, Timmy. Bold and italics. Do not pick this guy up.
Not bold. Oh. When you get bold and italics, that's the end of the road.
Yeah,
don't get no
worse. That's right.
That.
It's the end of the road, Timmy. All right, Timmy, it is a wrap up. I wanted to go an hour. We went an hour and 18 minutes. Good show. Great stuff. Timmy, I love it. We do these fantasy intensive shows because you get a chance to really show your stuff, and you did it tonight, and I really appreciate it. I know our listeners do as well.
Well, thanks so much, Rich. we're getting to that stage. We're almost into the last week of November, and before you know it, we'll be hopefully seeing some players signing, and we'll have a little bit more information to talk about. But I love these long-range questions because there's a lot of speculation. You're right on some, you're wrong on some, but it gives you an opportunity to do some speculating as to the future. And, hey, let's face it, it's part of our game, and it's a part that I really enjoy. Thank you.
Yeah, the winter meetings is in 2 weeks, Timmy. It's a little later this year, it feels like to me. It's going to be interesting. We'll probably have some movement here in the next couple of weeks. And then I'm expecting, because how late it is, there's got to be signings. There's got to be trades during the winter meetings. There has to.
You would think so, yeah. I know they could start the winter meetings here about the second week of October, and it would fit, Rich. So definitely they're late for us Fort Frances folk.
Yeah, so the winter meetings, I believe, in 9th, 10th, whatever day, that's Sunday, so 2 weeks from today. And, you know, it's that whole week. I know they leave on Thursday. And then the week after
right.
that, Timmy, you're talking, that's the week before Christmas. And then, you know, not a lot of stuff happens those last 2 weeks and, you know, the end of the year. So it's starting to get a little late here.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, you're starting to look the week after that. You're into the Christmas parties, you know, where teams like Pittsburgh breaks out the no-name cola and Boston breaks out the champagne, right?
That's really – so what is a no-name cola? That RC cola, is that considered no-name?
Yeah, generic stuff, yeah. The stuff
generic
that you buy, you know, you pick it up for like – $2.99 a case when you buy 15 cases or more, something like that.
For sure, Timmy, for sure. All right, my friend, you have any big plans for the week that you want to share with our listeners where they can find you?
I'll just be hanging out on Facebook, and that's pretty well it. Nothing major coming up this week. I'm sorting through the catchers, and I'm having a hard time because I would like to be able to list about six and say the rest are all number twos, but I can't do it, Rich. So the catchers are proving to be my Chicago Cubs minor league system. Does that sound about right?
Seattle took a step up. Now debatable who's got the worst system. The Marlins aren't. Oh, the Marlins got Victor in there, so. Yeah, I mean, maybe it is the Cubs. The Cubs maybe is the worst system, and the worst is Detroit. Detroit's got some guys as well. So, I'm going to go with the Cubs. Trying to think here, and, you know, my head's going through all the different systems. Yeah, I think it's the Cubs. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's going to, you know, how many times can I use – it's a two-catcher league, so you have to roster one. I'm at that stage, Rich.
Yeah, I know. You bring up a good question here. Let me just quickly go through this. Marlins, Red Sox is not a very good not a very good system. So, San Francisco, I got Joey Bart. He's okay. The Rangers, they're not very good either. So, but they're probably going to make some moves if they're going to. Yeah.
Yeah, they got no pitching, do they?
No, the Royals aren't very good. Yeah, it's hard to beat the Chicago Cubs.
Well, I guessed right.
Yeah, I'm looking at all these, and Toronto's got a good system, not a great system, good system. I know they got Bichette and Vlad, but, man, it drops off in a hurry there. I'm going to say Seattle was probably worse than the Cubs, but with Justice Sheffield and Thompson coming over, I think that makes it a much, much better system. So Tim, yeah, the catchers equating those to the Chicago Cubs is probably a pretty good thought there.
Okay. Score one for Tim and the analogies, right?
So I will be continuing to write, Timmy. We're publishing. We only published one team this week, so next week we've got two more teams coming up. And I am in the middle of the National League West, and that's what I'm writing. And I've just finished up the Colorado Rockies, so I hit the Dodgers and Padres. So there's going to be easy writing there, Timmy, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Right. I was going to say the Padres, you got to have at least – at least 7 or 8 starting pitchers in that Padres write-up. Man, they've got some incredible depth, don't they? And everybody's forgetting about Espinoza. Like, I mean, the Padres have got some serious talent and young pitchers. Oh.
Yeah, it's like you forget about Francisco Mejia's that system as well. I got Mackenzie Gore, Adrian Moran, Logan Allen, Michael Baez, Chris Paddock, Cal Quantrill, who has been injured. Anderson Espinosa's there. So those are, I don't know how many I listed, but they're definitely all in the top 15, a couple other good ones. But there could be 9, depending on where I put Buddy Reed. I'm not sure if he's a top 100 or not. A fantasy guy, he might be, even though he's a fourth outfielder because the speed is there. They could have 9 guys in the top 100.
That's scary, isn't it? The Braves probably have close to that many as well. They've got to have probably 5 or 6.
I've got Soroka, Toussaint, Kyle Wright, Kristen Pachi, Bryce Wilson, Ian Anderson. We haven't published the AL East, right? Or NL East, right?
No.
I'm telling everybody what I got. Drew Waters is there. Austin Riley can argue. Right. Yeah, they've got at least 8 that are there. And Colby Allard, who he's really fallen off. He didn't even make the top 10. He's at number 11. So it's this is a guy that's probably a number 4. And he just doesn't
fit. Yeah, I was
going to
say, in the Cubs system, he'd be a top 5 prospect, wouldn't he?
Yeah. But it's a guy that was really well thought of, even by myself, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But the stuff just never really developed. I mean, he's good, just not great. Yeah. It's a number 4 pitcher. And unfortunately, I think I did a long essay on – like, why it's not bad to be a number 4 pitcher, you know, the fact that he's a lefty, but it's just, it happens, you know. You come in number 1 draft pick and you think, you know, you're going to be number 2, and it just doesn't happen. And that happens way more times than it, you know, coming in as a number 2 and you develop as a number 2, and that's what's happened to Colby Allard, so.
Well, and on top of that, he also has to deal with the fact that there's a slew of pitchers in that system. So if he doesn't develop on a fairly even pace, he's going to get passed by somebody real quick and possibly buried in the system.
Yeah, he's already been passed. And you know, the guy that I keep hearing really good stuff about is Ian Anderson. I've never seen him pitch. He was a number 3rd pick overall. I think it was in 2016. And he's just making really quiet, good, solid progress. And I got him ranked 6, but people keep telling me this guy has a chance to be best pitcher in that system. And, you know, we'll see. It's some really good. I like Bryce Wilson a lot as well. I think he has a chance. I think he has a chance to contribute next year. By the way, he's a guy who would be targeting in deeper fantasy leagues next year.
Yeah. No, I heard there might be some makeup issues with Ian Anderson. Somebody told me he's thick as a brick, Rich.
Oh boy. Okay. And with that, so we will see everybody. It's next week. I am here. So Tim, you good for next week?
I am good to go, Rich. You have yourself a wonderful time in Brazil, and be well, my friend.
All right, be well. Thanks for the thick as a brick comment. That was very funny, Timmy. We'll let everyone Google that. So so
that's for the over 50 crowd, Rich.
Very, very true. Take care, Timmy. Be well.
Yeah, but see you next week.